So we are continuing our study of Pirkei Avos. And as I said, we started Pirkei Avos about a year and a half ago, and we are only 12 Mishnayos in, which means it's a skula for Arichas Yamin, that will have a long life to be able to finish all of this. And we are up to a beautiful Mishnah that is authored by Hillel. Hu Haya Omer, the Mishnah says, a very famous line, Im Ein Ani Li Mi Li, Ukeshe Ani Li Atzmi Ma Ani, V'im Lo Achshav Eim Asai. So we're going to talk this week and next week about what this Mishnah means to us. But what I feel is important just to get a context and to understand what exactly Hillel is teaching us here, perhaps if we look at the life, at the legendary life of Hillel HaZaken, who is the author of this Mishnah, we'll gain a full sense of appreciation and understanding as to what it is that he's trying to say, and why these were messages that he gleaned from his own life experience and chose to share with the world. My father often says that in Pirkei Avos we're told many, many times, Hu Haya Omer, he used to say. And my father told me on many occasions that perhaps Hu Haya Omer means his essence used to say. That if you looked at this individual, you saw this is the way this person lived his or her life. Hu Haya Omer, just looking at them, it exuded these messages because it was so much a part of who their essence was. So the Chazon Ish writes very famously, if you look in number Aleph here, Roy lemachazikim b'toras Hashem ladaz es gedolea. It is important for those who study the Torah Hashem not only to study the words of Torah itself, not only to study the actual text, but also he says ladaz es gedolea, to know about the greats of our generation and of previous. Ba'ofim ha'amiti ki ha'idia shel chachmei hador libam umidasam. Hein hein gufei Torah, says the Chazon Ish, understanding and studying the life and the legacy of great individuals is something that can also be considered gufei haTorah. That too is considered to be a staple of what Torah represents and so much a part of what we need to know well as well. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Sefer Shaarei Tshuva, Yadua hadavar, ki min hamidos hanos lesaper b'shvach hachachamim v'hatzadikim. He says that there is an age-old practice for people to talk about Shvach HaTzadikim VaChachamim, to talk about the great deeds and the great life of great individuals, Kamo Shenemar VaChakar Kavodem Kavod. So Rav Kook writes in one place that when we read and when we talk about the life and legacy of great giants, he says there is a great toelis. There is a purpose to do so. It's not just because we want to sit around Shalashudas and say very nice stories that are going to make people cry. That's not the be-all and end-all. That's a nice thing to do. But there's a reason for it, says Rav Kook. It's supposed to inspire us. And Rav Kook writes, HaKore HaRoes HaHod VeHaHadar. When we review the life and the stories of great individuals, and you see the glory and the majesty with which they engage the world, HaKdusha VaHatiferes HaPnimis SheZachal LaEm HaIsh HaGadol. It should inspire and encourage and motivate all of us to do the very same in some way, to act in such ways. If we are unable to emulate and mirror and model that personality entirely, obviously, says Rav Kook, we may not see ourselves as being those individuals, but to take something away from the life of the individual that we're describing will inadvertently make us shift perspective and think differently. And therefore, says Rav Kook, it's so critical for us to take time every once in a while and think about the life and the dream and the legacy that these great individuals had and see how to incorporate some of their messages into our own. I was talking this past Shabbos, Shabbos morning when I gave a drasha here in the shul, I was talking about, as we mentioned last week, two great people who passed away in the Jewish community, and I said whatever I said, but somebody came over to me after davening, Mr. Silverstein here from the neighborhood, and he told me an amazing story. He said that he grew up on the Lower East Side, and after he had gotten married, he used to go often with his wife to visit his parents, and he was there for Shabbos, and he said that on Sunday morning they were packing up the car to come back to their house, wherever they live. And lo and behold, they noticed Rav Moshe Feinstein was standing on the corner. And they were surprised. Why was he waiting there? So he rolled down the window and he asked him, are you waiting for something? Do you need help? And Rav Moshe said, I'm too weak to walk to the yeshiva, and I'm just waiting for somebody to stop and give me a ride. So Mr. Silverstein was so excited, he said, I would love to give you a ride. And he asked his wife to go to the back seat so that Rav Moshe could come and sit in the front, and they would drive him a few blocks away to the yeshiva. And Rav Moshe said, either your wife is going to sit in the front with you, or I cannot come into your car. Why should you ask your wife to sit in the back just because you now want to offer me a ride? And he said that it made such an impression on him that you could be Rav Moshe Feinstein and somebody innocently offers you a ride on the street corner and you feel that why shouldn't a husband and wife have time together sitting the way husbands and wives normally sit in the front seat of a car? Why should any of them go to the back just because Rav Moshe Feinstein wants to take a ride with you? And that, I think, is just one example of a million of how great people live life. And when you hear a story like that, I don't know that we all have that level of deep sensitivity and caring and thoughtfulness. But it does make you pause. It does make you think just a little bit about the way great people live their lives and some of that greatness that we can learn from them. So let's find out a little bit about Hillel, the author of our Mishnah, and try to understand perhaps why is it that Hillel chose to share the messages that he did. Again, Hillel's message in our Mishnah is, Im ein ani li, mi li. If I am not for myself, who will be? Ukeshe ani la'atzmi ma'ani. But if I live life only for myself, then what am I? Ve'im lo achshav em asai. And if I don't take care of something now, if I don't seize the moment, when will I ever have the opportunity? Let's get into the story of Hillel HaZaken. Hillel was born and raised, he studied all of his years in Bavel. When he was 40 years old, he chose to move to Eretz Yisrael because there were things in halacha, there were areas in learning, in Torah study, that he felt he did not have an accurate understanding of. So he decided, if I go to Eretz Yisrael at 40 years old and he sits by the feet, he sits in the yeshiva of Shmaya v'Avtalion, two of the towering giants of the time, so he assumed that he would have a better understanding of those obscure areas of Torah study. And that's what he did. He moves to Eretz Yisrael at 40 years old with his family. He struggled there. He had abject poverty, as we'll see in a few minutes. He lived in very extreme and excessive conditions there. And when he was finished studying whatever it is that he wanted to master over those years, he moved back to Bavel. He took his family back. At 80 years old, the Gemara says, Hillel decided that now it's the right time to move to Eretz Yisrael for good. So Hillel picks up his family again at 80 years old and moves to Eretz Yisrael. Just so happened to be at the time, in Israel, he was not aware of this, but in Israel they were looking for somebody to serve as the leader of the community. And now that Hillel came onto the scene and started letting people know who he was, so it became an obvious choice that Hillel was going to be the one to lead the Jewish people, so much so that the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah that Hillel was such an effective leader. Kishe betchila, in the beginning, kishe nishtakcha Torah meYisrael, when Jews forgot about Torah study. So Ezra HaSofer, as we know, many Jews during that 70-year period in Galus, many Jews forgot all of the laws of the Torah, which is an amazing phenomenon. You live with a Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, you go into Galus for 70 years. How can they forget everything? Didn't you have grandparents? Didn't you have aunts and uncles, cousins? Nobody remembered anything? And in case you think that that's surprising, just think back no further than Soviet Jewry. That wasn't much longer than 70 years. And look at the religious destruction. Look at the religious devastation that happened there in such a short span of time. Jews who simply didn't know what an Aleph Beis looked like. They didn't know what a Siddur was. They didn't know the basics of what Torah Jewry represents. They never heard of Shabbos, never heard of Bris Milah, never heard of any of the concepts that we're all familiar with. Kashrus, Shofar, Chanukah, nothing. 70 years is enough to destroy religiously an entire generation and generations to come. That's what happened when the Jews left Eretz Yisrael and went into Galus Bavel. There was assimilation. There was a complete corrosion, a complete breakdown of everything that Jewish life was all about. Until Ezra came along and he led the Jewish people and once again reinstituted all of the laws of the Torah, reinvigorated the Jewish community. And says the Gemara, this was cyclical. It happened again. In the days of Hillel, there were Jews who were living in Babel, there were Jews who were living in Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah was once again forgotten. Until Hillel came along and re-energized, reinvigorated the Jewish people to once again be strict adherence to the laws of the Torah and to its principles. The Medrash goes so far as to say that in some respects, Hillel HaZaken was such an effective Jewish leader that he was in some way on par with Moshe Rabbeinu. So let's see, the Medrash tells us in number Dalit. Moshe ben Mea ve'Esrim Shana, we're all familiar with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu died at 120 years old. And there's a major question, is it true that, you know, we always say you should live until Mea ve'Esrim Shana. Is that true? Are we giving people a curse? That they should only live till 120 years old? Perhaps people can live longer. I don't know. It's not clear where this comes from, that you cannot live more than 120 years. But that seems to be the accepted position all over the world, at least in Jewish communities, that 120 years is the maximum life that a person can live. And it seems that it comes from the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is a life of perfection. Moshe Rabbeinu was Echad Me'arba Shemesu Be'im Me'eva Esrim Shana. Says the Medrash, it's famous that Moshe Rabbeinu lived 120 years. However, Moshe was not alone in that experience. There were four people who were blessed with 120 unbelievable years. And who were they? Moshe, Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Akiva. Moshe haya b'Mitzrayim mem shana, says the Medrash. Moshe lived in Mitzrayim 40 years. Then he ran away to Midian for 40 years. And after he was there, he came back and led the Jewish people for another 40 years. So that was the breakdown of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Hillel, Ala mi Bavel ben Mem Shana. Hillel came to Eretz Yisrael when he was 40 years old. Shimesh Chachamim Mem Shana. For 40 years he went and he studied under the feet, under the tutelage of some great leaders of the generation. And then the last 40 years of his life, from 80 till 120, Hillel led the Jewish people with pride. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Asak b'Pragmatia Mem Shana. He was a businessman for 40 years. Then the next 40 years of his life, he studied Torah. And the last 40 years, he became the leader of the Jewish people. And so too Rabbi Akiva. Lama Torah Mem Shana, Upirnes Es Yisrael Mem Shana. I think about this Medrash. How many 40-year-olds do you know that are willing to make a complete life change, an overhaul of all that they've been accustomed to, of all that they've been doing until that point? Most people by the age of 40 are pretty settled. Or if not, maybe they'll never be settled. Nothing's going to change. It's a personality. But by 40 years old, how many people do you know that are highly accomplished in whatever it is that they've done, and yet they make a decision that life has more opportunities for me to do something meaningful in a totally different arena, in a totally different place than I was before? It's the first mark of greatness that we learn about Hillel HaZaken. That he can be a recognized personality in Bavel, but he says it's not enough. At 40 years old, he picks up his family, moved to Eretz Yisrael because he said, there's more out there that I still haven't seen, that I still don't know. I need to master more in my life. Recreates his life, moves to Eretz Yisrael, goes back to Bavel afterward. At 80 years old, how many 80-year-olds do you know that are healthy enough to move around like this? But even if they are, 80 years old, he picks up and says, you know, now it's time for a new chapter of my life. So the 80-year-olds that we know that do that, at least the 80-year-olds that I know that do such things, what do? So they used to live in New York, and then they retired at 65 or 70, and now they recreate a life in Florida. What's the recreation of that life? They move down to Florida. They FaceTime their children and grandchildren every day. All their friends are around them. They have a wonderful setup there. Everything's great. Non-stop programming in the community that they move to. It's a wonderful life. It's not such a major sacrifice. Imagine an 80-year-old giving up everything in the world, everything in the world, to then move to Eretz Yisrael, to a community that he does not know, with people that he's unfamiliar with a job that he does not have. And on top of that, at 80 years old to assume responsibility for the Jewish community. It's not easy to be a Jewish leader. Certainly not easy to be the only Jewish leader of your time. And yet, Hillel did all of that. Does it not bring out the point? Hu Haya Omer, you look at the life and you study the trajectory of the life of Hillel. Do you not see what he means when he says, Imlo Achshav Emasai? That's our Mishnah. Hillel's whole essence bespoke this quality. Imlo Achshav Emasai. I don't care that I'm 40, I don't care that I'm 80, I don't care I'm 120, there's something that I can do. And I will never be satisfied if I don't take advantage of this opportunity that's in front of me now. If I don't seize the moment that God gave me now, He gave me health, He gave me years, He gave me intellect, He gave me an opportunity to do something. Well, Hillel says, Imlo Achshav Emasai. And you know what? Hillel didn't have to say it. It was Hu Haya Omer. You looked at the story of his life, and it spoke for itself. That's the way we live life. That's the way everyone needs to live life. My grandfather, my father's father, taught in YU, I don't know for how many years. But he used to come 2 days a week. In his older years, I think he passed away at 96. He gave shir till he was 95 and a half. And he used to come in to YU. My father would pick him up on Monday nights. He would drive him. My grandfather would sleep in the dorm. Monday night, he would give shir Tuesday and Wednesday. And then he would go back to Brooklyn every week. And I remember my grandfather once told us, you know, we were talking to him, schlep every week, it's hard for him to walk, and you come to yeshiva and you sleep in the dorm, it's probably not the most comfortable bed, and you're dealing with like 20-year-olds giving shir, guys who were skipping class, my grandfather would sit there and take attendance every day. It's like, you know, you're 95 years old. And he said, the day I stop doing this is the day I'm going to die. He told us that. He said, this keeps me alive. This is what I'm here for. Because he had something to share, he had something to do. I remember as a child, we had the opportunity to watch Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who was the brother, the Rav's younger brother. And he had such terrible yisurim. He was such a weak and frail person. He had, I think, a number of strokes. I actually, as a child, every morning, I used to daven in YU with my father, which was a painful experience as a child to daven in a long yeshiva minyan every day, but I went with my father every day. And the highlight of my experience as a child, I was not excited about davening at all, but I was excited about the fact that every day Rav Aaron Soloveitchik used to come in, he would fly in from Chicago to come and give shir. He could barely walk. He was on a wheelchair. And I remember he had dignity. He didn't want to be wheeled into the Beis Medrash when he was still able to walk a little bit. And I remember he would walk in so late to davening because till he got across the street, until somebody helped him, it just would take him forever. And I still have ringing in my ears how he would walk from the door of the Beis Medrash to his seat, which was right next to my father. And each step he would say, Achas, Achas ve'achas, Achas u'shtayim. It made such an impression on me. It took him so long to get to where he needed to get to. I used to put on his tefillin for him every day, but his arms were paralyzed, so he could hardly keep the tefillin on. We had to wrap rubber bands around it that it should stay on. And I remember watching how this man used to still give shir. He used to still continue to teach. With all this going on, you can't even keep tefillin on your arm. And you're continuing to go on like this. And says Hillel, Hu Haya Omer, this is what my life represents. Imlo Achshav Emasai. Every moment of life is an opportunity. You just have to be able and willing to look for it and see it. A person has every right to say, I'll put my feet up, I've had a successful life. I raised a wonderful family. I helped out a community. I invested in my business. I invested in my children. I invested in whatever it may be, in all my friendships. And I've gotten to a really good place. And Hillel tells us, that's all nice. But Imlo Achshav Emasai, understand that at every juncture of life, there's an opportunity lurking in the background. There's always something there that someone could take advantage of. There's always a position that we can put ourselves in, where we can continue to be productive, to be helpful, and to be contributing members. Rabbi Akiva, think about the story of Rabbi Akiva. He's one of the personalities mentioned here in the Medrash who lived 120 years. So forget about the fact that he had a long, fruitful, amazing life. But Rabbi Akiva, did he really have an amazing life? The first 40 years of his life, we're told, Rabbi Akiva was a complete Am Haaretz. Rabbi Akiva knew nothing at all. So much so that when his wife fell in love with him, Rachel, she was the daughter of the wealthiest man in Eretz Yisrael, Kalba Savua. Her father was the wealthiest individual in Eretz Yisrael. And yet, when Rachel fell in love with this guy who was a street bum, who knew absolutely nothing, never what her father had envisioned for her, but she said, I see something in him. I see potential in him. And the father said, are you out of your mind? He said, not who you're supposed to marry. He wrote her out of the will. He wrote her out of the will because he said, how dare you marry a boy like this? Rabbi Akiva got married. He applied himself. And he became the leader of the Jewish people. He had 24,000 students. It's an amazing number. That was before the internet. 24,000 students in person. And who knows what kind of influence all of them had. Imagine how powerful Rabbi Akiva was. V'kula mesu, says the Gemara, they all died. Mi Pesach v'ad Atzeres. 24,000 Talmidim died in a span of 6 weeks. Well, what does Rabbi Akiva do? A whole life. I would say, I lived the first 40 years of my life being in Am Haaretz, not being a Talmud Chacham, not teaching Torah. I then spend the next period of my life building up a citadel of Torah, a major following, a huge army of leaders, and now they all die. Well, I would say, let's just go back to plan A. Maybe being in Am Haaretz was a better idea. Maybe this is not for me. And no, Rabbi Akiva says, I'm going to pick up and I'm going to start over. At Shabbat Eitzel Rabbeinu Shabbadarim, the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva went and he found 5 students who decided that they believed in Rabbi Akiva's ideals and they wanted to learn from him. Do you know that those 5 personalities are the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it? All of the Mishnayos come from those 5 people. Almost all of Torah Shebaal Peh comes from those 5 students. The courage that Rabbi Akiva had to say, Im lo achshav emasai. Doesn't matter how much I've done, doesn't matter how much has happened, every moment of life is an opportunity. And this is something that we saw in last week's Parsha. Avraham Avinu at 99 years old gives himself a bris milah. 99 years old. A person is willing to recognize a truth at 99 years old. A person is humble enough to understand that life is bigger than the way I see it. That life has more to offer than what I've accomplished. That there's more for me to explore, that there's more for me to do. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the Shari Tshuva that when we talk about repentance, when we talk about tshuva, it's something that every individual, every human being has an opportunity to take advantage of. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes, it's not only for young children. You know, sometimes we see young children as they're developing, and it's our job as parents to try and steer them in the right direction, to point out very carefully and with sensitivity the areas in their lives that they can change, because it's easier to change younger people, younger children. But says Rabbeinu Yonah, don't make a mistake and think that it's only for young children to change. Im lo achshav emasai. Every human being has an opportunity to always reevaluate, to always reconsider, and to always think once again about how they live life and how perhaps they can live life differently, how they can maybe consider things differently, see situations differently, and perhaps see themselves differently as well. That, I believe, is lesson number 1, and it's such a powerful lesson to walk away with from the life of Hillel HaZaken. And as we said, perhaps that gives meaning to the end of our Mishnah, Im lo achshav emasai. Just take one look at Hillel's life and you understand that's what his life is all about. Let's look at a second issue, and that is, we'll turn to the slichos that we say throughout the period of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And we say, Alshamnu Bagadnu. We go through a whole litany of issues that we feel we failed HaKadosh Baruch Hu in. And in the end, the Rambam says, we have to say, Aval Anachnu V'Avoseinu Chatanu. We have to say, Aval Anachnu V'Avoseinu Chatanu. However, we and our parents have done things wrong. That's part of the tshuva process, and the Rambam says that's a critical part. You cannot leave that out. I once heard a phenomenal insight that Dr. Lamb shared with us. I know I'm quoting a lot from those luncheons we had, but they were very impactful to me. And he shared with us an amazing insight. And he said, you know, you'll go through life and you'll see all kinds of people, and you'll meet many different types of individuals. But he said, you have to believe that most of them are well-intentioned people. And even though everybody does things wrong, nobody's perfect. We all sin, we all make mistakes, but we have to believe that most people are not malicious in the things that they do wrong and the mistakes that they make. Most of us know right from wrong most of the time, and we choose right over wrong most of the time. So what happens? So where do we go wrong? What happens is that we rationalize, that we come up with all kinds of excuses, and we explain, even though we know that this kind of behavior is wrong, but in this circumstance, in this situation that I happen to be in, it's not wrong. And that's the way we go about life, because otherwise we would never do anything wrong. How else can you do something wrong? There's like a cognitive dissonance. You can't have so much disparity between what you know is wrong and how you behave. So how do you live with that? The answer is that you give excuses, that you justify, that you defend a negative character trait, a negative behavior, when even though you know in your heart of hearts it's an obvious deviation from what you know is to be the right thing to do. Dr. Lamb told us, that's living a life saying, aval, aval, aval. It's a life saying, but this, but that, but the other thing. I know it's right, but X, but Y, but Z. That's living a whole life of aval. We have a million and one reasons to defend ourselves, to excuse ourselves, and to explain why it is that we're involved in certain behaviors. And he says, we do this because it's the only way that we can have a sense of self-satisfaction in life. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to exist. And this applies in so many areas of life. I remember he gave us an example and he said, you know, everybody believes that you should be a family person. It's good to be focused on family. Yeah, in theory, we all believe it. It's very nice. It's very important. It's a great thing to do. But the problem is, I also have to make a parnasa. So I'm busy at work. And because I'm trying to get more clients, so when I come home from work, I have to talk to new clients. And I have to make meetings. So when my kids are going to sleep at night, I'm not available. And when it comes Shabbos, I'm so exhausted because I had such a difficult week, I can't spend time with them because I have to rest up so that next week I can have a better week. And I can be more successful and more involved. All of those are wonderful rationalizations, but they are just rationalizations. In the end of the day, you will go through all of life having nothing to do with your family. So it's true. In theory, if you would ask a businessman, a businesswoman, who's very invested in making themselves successful, do you believe that family life is important? Of course. They would all say yes. Do you believe that you should invest of your time in family? Yes, of course. Well, do you do that? No, I believe, of course, everybody should do that. The problem is, I'm unable to do so. And he told us that he felt it was important for us, before we went into a public position where a lot of our time would be taken away from family, he thought it was important just to take a moment and think every so often about what your priorities are. How much are you willing to invest in the community, and how much are you going to hold back because family is important? And we all believe that family is important. So to me, it made a very big impression because I thought it was a very important lesson for all of us. And although we all have communal responsibilities and professional responsibilities, and we all have expectations and obligations and whatever it might be, but in the end of the day, if we believe that there's an ideal that's important to us and to our families, then we need to make time for it. And we cannot live a life of just saying, aval this, aval that, because in the end of the day, the only one who will lose is me. I'm going to lose out. because I will have no relationship with my children, with my family, that I should have invested my own time to do. So he quoted a line from Prime Minister Levi Eshkol, and he said, commenting on a pasuk in Sefer Eicha, Darkei Tzion Avelos, which means, the streets of Tzion, the streets of Yerushalayim, are in mourning. They're empty, they're desolate, they're destroyed. But he said that Prime Minister Levi Eshkol suggested, perhaps it also means, Darkei Tzion Avelos, that means, the streets of Tzion are desolate because everyone's living a life of Avol. So many Jews in the diaspora standing up and saying, of course I love Israel, of course I love Yerushalayim. I would do anything in the world to live there, but right now it's not a possibility for me. Right now my children, right now my parnasa, right now my family, right now my this, my that, my parents, my grandparents, everybody has all kinds of excuses. The economy's not great there, and who knows what's going to be, and the hospitals, the healthcare is not good, and the insurances, everybody has excuses. And because of that, he said, Darkei Tzion Avelos. The streets of Yerushalayim are empty because everybody has all kinds of excuses. Because everybody lives a life saying, Avol this, Avol that. I would love it in theory, but it's just not going to work out for me. Think back to the story of Yosef and his brothers, and we're going to encounter it in just a few parshios from now. Yosef demands that they leave one of the brothers hostage. And suddenly they all begin to think. It gives them an opportunity for introspection. This reminds us of what happened when we got rid of our own brother Yosef. Obviously, they were unaware of the fact that that was who they were talking to. And what is their response? What do they say? When it starts becoming clear to them, they say, Avol Hashemim Anachnu. Avol Hashemim Anachnu means, we are guilty. Perhaps, Dr. Lamb suggested, perhaps it means we lived a life of Avol. The reason why we're guilty is because we gave all kinds of excuses for our behavior. We didn't really murder him. We just wanted to get him out of the way. He was causing all kinds of family problems. He was causing problems between us and our father. He was pivoting himself. And really, we just tried to put him in a pit, and we figured that he would figure out his own way of life. We didn't want to kill him. And they gave all kinds of excuses. And they even had a Beis Din got together at the time to decide, is it right, is it wrong? And they went through the whole process. And they believed that they could rationalize everything. And when it finally came to a moment of truth, the words that they say are, Avol Hashemim Anachnu. Our problem is that we lived an entire life of excuses. And that's the way many people live their entire lives. In Parshas Vayigash, the Torah tells us when finally Yosef re-engages with his brothers. So just take, for example, the contrast of Yosef's life to that of his brothers. Lo yachlu echav lanos mipanav ki nivalu mipanav. Yosef's brothers were unable to answer him when he says, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. He doesn't give them musar, he doesn't say anything. He just says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, ha'od avi chai, is my father alive. Lo yachlu echav lanos, also his brothers' jaws dropped. What were they going to say? Ki nivhalu meipanav, they were so ashamed. And Rashi quotes in the Gemara, Oilanu miyom hadin, oilanu miyom atochacha. How embarrassing that was for them, that they now re-engage with their brother. Look how the whole story turned out. The Balaturim there writes, what were they so embarrassed of? What was so embarrassing about it? What was so shocking? Obviously, it's surprising that your brother became the viceroy of Mitzrayim. That is surprising. Obviously, you didn't realize that he was orchestrating this whole story. Okay, so that's a surprise. But why is it so embarrassing, humiliating? The Baal HaTurim writes, very cryptic phrase, Shelo hele al daitam sheyagia Yosef lemaila kazu. What shocked them was, we never in a million years thought that this would be our brother. With all the obstacles, with all the impediments, with all the roadblocks in his way, he was a neglected child in the family. We all hated him. We picked on him. And after that, we decided we had enough. We threw him out of the house. Imagine the psychological trauma. How many therapists he would have been to today. How many years of emotional trauma he must have had. He's sold down to a foreign land. He doesn't speak the language. All of a sudden, he gets there, and a woman accuses him of being involved in inappropriate behavior. He gets thrown into jail. He doesn't see any end in sight. He doesn't know anybody. He meets two individuals there. He asks them to please remember him. Nothing seems to be going right. Everything about his life is one big disaster. The brother said, nothing will ever come of him. We never imagined. Why were they embarrassed? Because they said, Lohela al daitam sheagia Yosef lemaila kazu. It didn't dawn on us in a million years that our brother, who was abused, who was tortured, who was estranged from all of us, who assimilated into the Egyptian culture, it didn't dawn on us in a million years that he would make a life for himself. So how did Yosef do it? Well, there's two options when you face obstacles and impediments. You can say, I would have loved to accomplish all kinds of things, but look what God did to me. Look how he played out my life. It's just not going to happen. Or you can be like Yosef and say, I'm not going to live a life of avol. All the brothers said, we give excuses. There's always an excuse. We excuse the horrific behavior with which we treated our brother. Yosef says, I live life giving no excuses. I take responsibility for my own life. And that's how he is successful. Why are the brothers embarrassed when they see him? Because they realize there are always two options with everything in life. You can look at it and say, I need pity. I need people to feel bad for me because look where I am. Or you can pick it up where it is and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if this is what you give me, if this is where I am in life right now, then that's where I belong. And it obviously means there's something I can accomplish, and I will overcome the obstacle, or I will work around it. I'll do whatever needs to be done. I am not going to give up on my life opportunities. Im lo achshav, emasai. Why do I mention that? Because Hillel is a personality who taught us that there are never excuses. The Rambam says in Hilchos Talmud Torah, very famously, look at number Hey. Kol Ishmi Yisrael Chayiv B'Talmud Torah. Everyone needs to study Torah. Bein Ani, Bein Ashir, whether one is wealthy, whether one is not wealthy at all, whether one is impoverished. Bein Shalim B'Gufo, Bein Bal Yisurim, whether I have a disability or whether my life is just going in a healthy course of events. Bein Bachar, Bein Shehayazakein, Gadol, Shatashish Kolcha, whether I am young, whether I am at an adult stage, at an older stage in my life. Afilu Hayaani Hamispanis Minatstako Machazar al Apsachim. Even if I'm peddling around trying to make ends meet, trying to sustain my family, I still have an obligation to study Torah. Afilu Bal Isha Ubanim. Even if I have familial responsibilities, I'm married, I have children, and it's a busy time, it's a busy life, I still have an obligation to learn Torah. How do we know this? It's learned from a Gemara Maseches Yuma. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara says in Maseches Yuma Lamed Hey, Ani va'ashir v'rasha ba'in ledin. La'achar me'ev esim shana, after 120 years, God is going to have a conversation with all of us. And the Gemara says, there are poor people who show up there, there are wealthy individuals who show up there, and there are evil doers who come there. La'ani omrim lo, they ask the poor person, mipnei ma lo asakta b'torah. Why didn't you learn Torah? Well, the poor man says, I have a good excuse. Ani hayisi v'tar b'mezonosai. What did you want from me, God? You made me poor. So what should I do? I had to spend my time peddling around, trying to make a few dollars. When was I supposed to learn Torah? What do you want? They say to him, Klum ani hayisa yoser mehillel. Were you more impoverished than Hillel? Hillel lived a life of abject poverty. And yet, look what he did with it. Look how much he invested of himself. Look how much he took advantage of his own opportunities. What an amazing life of Hillel. And the Gemara goes on to say a story about how Hillel didn't have enough money. It used to be you had to pay a quarter, a nickel, to get into the Beis Medrash, whatever it was. Hillel didn't have that money. And the Gemara says that day, Hillel decided to climb up to the roof. And he sat by the skylight, and he figured, maybe I'll hear what's going on inside. If I can't pay to get in, at least I'll sit on the roof. The Gemara says it snowed that evening, and Hillel was covered in snow. When they came to the Beis Medrash in the morning, they saw that there was so much darkness in the room, the skylight was covered over. It wasn't until then that they realized Hillel was laying on the roof, because he said, "I will never have an excuse. I'm not going to live all of life with excuses. Im lo achshav emasai. If I give excuses my whole life, then I will never take advantage of what life has to offer." And Hillel is the one that the Gemara says is Mechayiv es ha'aniyim. Hillel is the one who obligates all those who live a life of difficulty like he did. And Hillel teaches all them, stop giving excuses. Your life was not more difficult than mine. And yet I persevered, I overcame. I didn't just overcome, I thrived. And I really developed to become an amazing personality. And finally, let's share one more lesson about the life and legacy of Hillel. And that is, the Gemara tells us about many, many disputes between Shammai and Hillel. The Gemara has over 300 machloksim. Shammai and Hillel were always at each other's throats, always disputing, always disagreeing with each other, although the Gemara says that they always did it with dignity. They always had respect for one another. So much of what is missing today when people disagree, they just can't figure out how to do it with respect. They can't figure out how to hear the other perspective, how to hear the other side, even if you don't agree with it. The Gemara says, Hillel and Shammai fought for so many years on so many critical issues, and yet the Gemara says, they allowed their children to marry one another. They used to come visit each other's homes. They left it all at the door. We can still be friends, even if we disagree. Even if we don't see the same persuasions, even if we don't see the world in the same way, we can still get along and live in the same community and daven in the same shuls and be a part of one group of friends. So the Gemara says in Maseches Erev in Daf Yud Gimel, Shalosh Shanim Nechaku BeShamayi BeSilo. For 3 years there was an ongoing debate about a particular issue. Halalu Amrim Halacha Kimosenu. BeSilo said, we are right. BeShamayi said, we are right. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a heavenly voice comes out and says, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. You're both right. How can we both be right? One says mutter, one says aser. One says tame, one says tar. How can you both be right? So the Baskol meant to say that you both have legitimate arguments. However, halacha kibeis Hillel. Although you're both correct in some level, Beis Hillel is going to be the accepted opinion. Why? Says the Gemara, Mipnei shenavin va'aluvin hayu. Because Beis Hillel was considerate, he was humble, he was understanding. Beis Hillel was gentle and respectful. Beis Hillel always quoted the opinion of his opposition. And because of that gentle and considerate nature of Hillel, his opinion is the accepted one for all future generations. That was the hallmark characteristic of Hillel. And the Gemara says we should learn from Hillel, Le'olam yihyeh adam an v'san kehillel. We should always live life in this gentle and considerate way in which Hillel lived. It's so much a staple, it's such a critical ingredient for success in learning Torah and being a good Jew, is to have a sense of tremendous humility, a sense of understanding of other people. And the Gemara tells us the great lengths that Hillel went to show how important, how critical humility is in the experience of life. If that is the case, there's a problematic statement in the Gemara Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara says that once a year they had a fantastic celebration in the Beis HaMikdash, the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And the Gemara says that all the Jews came from all over the world to celebrate together, and it was an amazing spectacle. So much so, the Gemara says, Misha lo ra simcha zu lo ra simcha miyamav. If you didn't see this, you've never seen anything. You ever been to one of those experiences? Like, you say to yourself, if somebody didn't see this, it's like they're missing out. I went to the Kenes HaShluchim a few times. I was amazed by it, very inspired by many aspects of it. But I said, anyone who hasn't been here to experience what it is, you can't explain it to them. You're missing out. Chaval that this year it didn't happen in person. But there are some experiences where, if you weren't there, it's very hard to describe. So the Gemara says, Simchas Beis HaShoeva was one of those times. Once a year on the calendar, they had a Simchas Beis HaShoeva on Chol HaMoed Sukkis. It was so amazing. And anyone who wasn't there, it was just indescribable. One of the predominant figures of that celebration, one of the important personalities that dominated that experience was Hillel. Hillel was there, everyone was celebrating, everyone was dancing, they were all looking at him. He was the leader of the Jewish people. And the Gemara says he gets up on the podium as everyone is dancing and he says, I have a short few words to share with everybody. Just one sentence, and that is, Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I, Hillel, am here, then we have a great celebration. Sounds like a very troubling statement. Troubling statement on many levels. But especially if the Gemara tells us how humble Hillel was, what a gentle, kind soul and spirit he led his life with. So then how can Hillel say, Im ani kan, hakol kan, if I'm here celebrating, then everything's great. What kind of humility is that? What does it mean? Well, Rashi says he was not talking about himself. He was talking about God. He said, Im ani kan, if God, who is the one and only, if God is here, then we have a great celebration. And if God is not present in our celebration, then all of this is worth nothing. But Tosas there says, no. It's not what the Gemara says. Hillel got up and said to the entire group who was assembled there, if I am here, life is great. And if I'm not here, there's nothing to celebrate. What does that mean? How could he say such a thing? My father writes in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav, the Rav Soloveitchik asked this question. And he said the following. Oh, it's not on the other side, I'm sorry. This is a two-sided copy, just the other side came out blank. Sorry. So my father writes from the Rav, Shehillel haya anav mikal adam. Hillel, who was the one who exuded modesty, everybody knew it. Dafka hu shemadgish es ha'ani. At the same time, Hillel taught the Jewish people, you always need to have that balance. Hillel said, Beliha karas ha'ani, if you don't recognize that you do have capability, that you do have possibility to do something special. Ein ha'adam yachal leitzer, you will never be able to accomplish anything. And Hillel said, you could be modest. You could be a person who just stands in the back. You could live a life where the Gemara says about you, everyone should be like Hillel in their level of extreme humility. But if you as an individual don't stand up and say, Im ani kan hakol kan, I have the ability that God gave me to do something with my life. I can accomplish. I can contribute in a meaningful way. Then what is all of that worth? A person needs to have a sense of self-value. The Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Ibarditchev, has a famous comment where he says, Noach ish tzaddik, tamim haya bedorosav. Noach was a great tzaddik. But even though Noach was a great tzaddik, the mabul happened anyway. And he was not successful in saving a single person's life more than God had originally intended. How can that be? 120 years, Noach is investing himself. Noach is giving speeches. You know, even if you're the worst speaker in the world, even if you really don't understand the art of speaking, of communicating, can you imagine somebody goes on a speaking tour for 120 years and doesn't impact a single person? Not one? There's always got to be someone in the crowd who just will take whatever you say somewhere. So imagine he's a globetrotter. He's going around giving speeches everywhere, talking to everyone who's willing to have him. 120 years of a career. Not one effective speech anywhere. It doesn't say he stopped. He continued. 120 years, not one person. What went wrong? What happened? The Barditcheva writes, the problem was Noach didn't believe in his own ability to change anybody. Noach said, you know, I have a relationship with God, I'm very lucky. More than that, what can I do? I don't have the capability to turn the world around. I don't have the opportunity to actually make a difference in the face of this devastation that's about to come. And that was his greatest mistake. Haya katan be'enav me'od. There's a difference between a healthy dose of humility and modesty and a person understanding that they have self-value and so much that they can contribute. Hu haya omer. Hillel, who always walked that tightrope of on the one hand being the ultimate modest, humble human being, on the other hand, standing up and saying, Imani kan hakol kan, a person needs to believe in their own opportunities. Hillel is the one who teaches in our Mishnah, Hu Haya Omer, Im ein ani li, mi li. That is this tightrope. That's what the Mishnah says. If I won't stand up and believe in myself, nobody else will. At the same time, Kishe ani la atzmi, if I believe that all of life is all about me, if I don't understand that there's a bigger context to the world, there's so much out there, and the world is so much bigger than just myself, then ma'ani, then what is my contribution? How can I do anything significant if I don't understand that I'm just one part of a major whole? Then nothing will come of me either. And Hillel says that's all of life, is balancing these two very opposing factors that we always need to keep in check, that we always need to keep in balance. On the one hand, im ein ani li mi li, I need to believe in myself, I need to invest in myself. I need to always rise to the occasion and take advantage of opportunity. At the same time, kesha ani la'atzmi ma'ani, I cannot live life only about myself, but always to remember ve'im lo achshav emasai. Always to remember that there is an opportunity lurking in the background at every juncture of life. Hillel himself was 40 when he changed paths in life. He was 80 when he changed a second time. Rabbi Akiva did this, Moshe Rabbeinu did it, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did it. It's what every great person needs to do, to always allow themselves to reconsider. If there's one thing we learned from this experience of COVID, there were so many ways in which we took for granted. Things just had to be this way. Right? In business, things needed to be just so. I needed to go into the office every day. I needed to be there at a certain time. Otherwise, the business wouldn't run. And we see everything was reevaluated. Everything can always be reevaluated. We can think again critically about so many other aspects of our lives. And Hillel teaches us it's never too late for us. There's never a time when we say we have to accept the reality and just take it for what it is and not believe that it can be changed in some way, and not believe that there's some opportunity from the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put us. Is it sometimes a difficult circumstance? Yeah, sometimes. But Hillel says, I lived through that. I've been there. I was accomplished. I was knocked down. But I tried again. And I was incredibly successful. And it was so meaningful. Those are the preliminary lessons that we learn from the life of Hillel HaZaken. Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue. But for now, we'll try to think about some of these perspectives, think about some of these teachings, and think about how we can take a little bit from the great life and legacy of Hillel HaZaken.